It's our third birthday.
Happy birthday, us. We'll be celebrating in a bumper birthday video coming soon, and we want to answer your questions.
So if you've ever wondered what our favourite facts are, or how we choose what events to cover, or why we got the giggles in a particular episode, now is your opportunity to ask.
Email us now at theretrospectors@gmail.com.
It's April 19th, 1967. And another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Aria, Rebecca, and Ollie, the Retrospectors.
Clad in a hooded sweatshirt and jogging trousers, KV Switzer looked much like the other 740 runners taking part in the Boston Marathon today in history in 1967. That was until a few miles into the world-famous road race when the hood of the sweatshirt slipped down, revealing that Switzer was in fact a lady, sparking a confrontation that would be captured on camera and shared around the world.
Yeah, this was the story of the next day's newspapers, front and back, in ways in which Catherine Switzer, to give her full name, hadn't even anticipated when she entered, because the Boston Marathon had been an all-male event for 70 years. She was a 20-year-old student at Syracuse University, and she'd been training with the men's cross-country team, including her coach, Arnie Briggs. She ran 31 miles with him whilst practicing and said, "I'd like to participate in the marathon with you. Take me with you." Persuaded him to take her along. They must have known that they were pushing the envelope, and I can't believe that isn't why she chose this gender-neutral name of KV Switzer when she signed up. But she says no, it wasn't intended to mislead anyone that she was a woman participating. It was her habit, it was how she signed off her college papers, KV Switzer.
Yeah, the Boston Marathon rulebook didn't actually address gender, but the Amateur Athletic Union, which oversaw the event, prohibited women from participating in races sanctioned by them that were longer than a mile and a half. And Switzer's father supported her decision to enter the race, and on the day of the event, she received encouragement and support from fellow runners assembling at the start. They all knew that she was a woman, and running alongside members of her club...
You make it sound like Twelfth Night.
Yeah. Like, wait a second,
she's
what's
like,
going
I came
on
in
here?
My doublet and breeches.
Yes, who is this woman with her bound breast? but she was running alongside her coach Arnie Briggs and her boyfriend Tom Miller. And she, as Rebecca said, she initially wore this hooded sweatshirt, but it fell off a few miles into the race. And as Switzer continued to run, a Sports Illustrated report recounts how Jock Semple, one of the race co-directors, leapt from a press truck and started chasing after her. And Semple had played a significant role in organizing the race and was known for his strict adherence to tradition and his seriousness regarding sort of marathon craft in general. And he'd previously confronted participants he deemed to be unserious, you know, people dressed in costumes or who were running it in ways that weren't taking the sport in a way that he regarded as serious. And he called these people weirdies. And so he ran after Switzer and tried to rip her race number off her back to prevent her from continuing as an official competitor.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we should say Semple was an absolute madman. In 1957, he was almost arrested for assaulting a runner who was wearing snorkeling gear, but he wasn't specifically a misogynist madman. In fact, once the rules were changed, spoiler alert, to allow women to run the marathon, Semple was 100% cool with it. He wanted the rules to be obeyed, whatever they were, and he later became quite chummy with Switzer. However, at this moment, he is bearing down on her from the press van. She later recalled, "A big man, a huge man with bared teeth, was set to pounce, and before I could react, he grabbed my shoulder and flung me back, screaming, 'Get the hell out of my race and give me those numbers.'" And as Arnie Briggs reached in to intervene, Semple shoved him over. Luckily for Switzer, her boyfriend, as we mentioned, Tom Miller, was also running with her. He was a hammer thrower. He pushed Semple to the ground, which enabled her to continue running. But even as these photos of Semple tangling with Switzer splashed across newspapers, the other co-director of the race, Will Cloney, was totally unrepentant and had a kind of Kafka-esque comment. He said, "Women can't run in the marathon because the rules forbid it. Unless we have rules, society will be in chaos," he added for good measure. I have to say, if this was a movie, he'd be played by Dabney Coleman. Look him up. He added, "If that girl were my daughter, I would spank her."
Wow.
It all falls apart at that point. It sounds relatively reasonable.
I mean, it's also because it's encapsulated in this image of a man accosting this woman trying to run the marathon, do nothing but do what everyone else around her is trying to do. It's such a clear intention of equality. that then creates this image of the man behind her grabbing at her, swearing at her, you know, baring his teeth, pushing her. And then, you know, of course you get the affray and Jock Semple goes flying off the side, which is just a brilliant photo. Yeah. So the image, the images from this event couldn't have made the point any better than if she'd actually won the marathon. Like, actually, this was the best possible way to argue for women to be involved in the Boston Marathon. Better than coming in at a decent time, which he did, actually. She crossed the line at 4 hours, 20 minutes, which is, you know, pretty adequate, isn't it, for a marathon? That wasn't the story. The story was, look how ridiculous this is. Like, you know, here's someone who just wants to run the marathon and who is 20 years old and does represent a new generation of people who simply do not understand why they're not being permitted to run the marathon. And look what they're coming up against. You know, this is the end of the 60s. There's this sense of, look at these weird old rules that we have. Why is this still the case? And it was encapsulated into an image.
And I think something about that image that splashed around the world really captured the attention, as you say, Ollie, but it also managed to overshadow the achievement of another woman who was running that day, Bobby Gibb, who actually had also run the year before in 1966. She had attempted that year to officially enter the race, but was denied by the Boston Athletic Association, who argued that women were not physiologically capable of completing the 26-mile distance. And despite this, Gibb managed to just enter surreptitiously and finish the race ahead of many of the participants, even though she wasn't officially registered. And then in 1967, the same year as Switzer, she returned to run it again. And that year she did really well. She ran it almost an hour faster than Switzer, but again, she wasn't an official competitor in the same way that Switzer was. And that's why Switzer gets the credit, even though there were these two women who were pushing the envelope, as it were.
Yeah, so Gibb, her tactic was she hid on the sidelines until the starting gun and then kind of snuck into the pack. She was wearing a hoodie and her brother's Bermuda shorts until she was safely on the way, when she peeled off her sweater to a positive reaction from spectators and fellow runners.
Ray, take it off!
I mean, to be fair, it probably helped her get such good finishing time that she didn't have to deal with the race co-director attempting to tackle her to the ground. Right. And that wasn't the first time female runners had tried similar stunts. You know, in 1963, two female runners, Mary Lepper and Lynn Carman, attempted to get into the Western Hemisphere Marathon in Culver City, California, the same way. Carman recalled, "Before the race, there was one official who spent about 20 minutes chewing me out, saying I'd never be able to have babies again." But anyway, on this day, Gibb finished in 3 hours, 21 minutes, putting her in the top third of all finishers. And once again, the villainous Will Cloney was unmoved. They said, you know, you said that women couldn't run marathons, even though Gibb had regularly been running 40 miles in training. And look, she's finished in 3 hours, 21 minutes. So what do you think now? Cloney said, "There's no such thing as a marathon for a woman. She may have run in a road race, but she did not race in the marathon."
Whoa. That's right. The quote continues, "I have no knowledge that this woman ran. She was not at any of our checkpoints and none of our checkers saw her. For all I know, she may have gotten on at Kenmore Square." Which is just so disparaging because obviously, as you say, lots of people around her had seen her and she didn't get on at Kenmore Square. But that was the issue. I mean, it's true that if you're not registered, you can't prove that you've done the whole run, right? Which is why it was so imperative that someone like Switzer, if it wasn't her, it would have been someone else eventually, registered, got a bib number, took part from the beginning, was seen to take part from the beginning, and then that argument
escaped
could be
being crash tackled.
Thing is that what happened on this day feels like an extremely 1967 moment. You know, it's rapid social change, women's lib. It's like you can see the generation gap between the fearless, open-minded youth like Catherine Switzer and then their hidebound elders. You know, Jock Semple was 63. It was like, oh, look, he's trying to chase down the youth movement. However, it wasn't really. So the Boston Marathon opened to women in 1972. It's a little bit slow. But women were not allowed to run in an Olympic marathon until 1984.
Yeah, and Switzer was actually in the commentary box watching the marathon. And she was also instrumental in the campaigning group that helped to get the women's marathon recognized as an official discipline at the 1984 Olympics in the first place. So she was really key to this whole unfolding of marathons becoming an official sport for women again.
That said, if you were someone who thought that women shouldn't compete in marathons ever because they can't be trusted, they could just jump out of a hedge at any moment and claim to have been competing all along, you did actually have some evidence in your favor. In 1980, when Rosie Ruiz won the Boston Marathon, she was the first place woman, and she had cheated. She was found to have just joined the marathon for the final mile. And actually would have got away with it too, if it weren't for the fact that she did win. She thought she'd come, you know, 10th and no one would notice and it would be a fun story. But actually she was the first place woman. It was like, how did you do that? Including Switzer, who was interviewing her for the telly. And Switzer was like, what, so you weren't noticed by any of the checkpoints and then you won? How did you do that? And she was outed fairly quickly as having cheated.
She was like, I was running so fast they just couldn't see me.
And so another week of retrospecting ends. But next week begins a day early at Club Retrospectors. Join us now to get an exclusive episode every Sunday. Patreon.com/retrospectors.